Dysfunctional families. You hear a lot about that, don't you? What is a dysfunctional family? From a definition in McGraw-Hill Concise Dictionary of Modern Medicine, dysfunctional family is a family with multiple internal conflicts, such as sibling rivalries, parent-child conflicts, domestic violence. Now, they also put mental illness. Often mental illness is simply sin in one's attitude, and we'll see that tonight. And then they mention a number of other things. In another definition, from an online dictionary or source, it says, a dysfunctional family is one in which conflict and instability are common. So those definitions of the way that term is used fits the story of Joseph very well. His family was one of instability. It was one of conflict. It was one of rivalry. And we'll see that in the course of our study tonight. Certainly not a new story to anyone in this audience, but they're still timeless lessons. So if you have your Bibles open to Genesis chapter 37, you know, when you study history, whether it's the history of the United States, whether it's the history of the world, or whatever it may be, there's always one problem. And that is the objectivity of the historian and how well he did his research. In other words, you may read two different histories about the same period of time and draw some different views from those. We're reading some history here in Genesis 37. And the beauty about it is that the writer, although he did not even live at this time, was a man that was equipped to write this history by God. And his credibility is confirmed by Jesus Christ himself. So that gives us confidence in the history that's presented. There's a lot of things about this history that we'd like to know that are not stated. But the things that are stated are there for our learning. We learn in 1 Corinthians that these examples in the Old Testament were written for our instruction. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And so hopefully we can gain some instruction from this particular example. So we start out our study here with the first question on the lesson. How old was Joseph when these events happened?
17.
Very good. 17 years old. How old are you, Lily? 15. 16. Let's see. Do we have any 17-year-old? How old are you, John Michael?
16.
How old are you, Noah?
17.
Hey, there's a 17-year-old. So we have some about that age. How old are you, Raylan?
14.
All right. So we've got some close and some right behind that. Joseph was 17. So try to imagine, young people, if you lived in a family like this, and this was what awaited you on the horizon, not far from where you're at today, and how would you survive in this kind of environment? So, now, Noah doesn't have a sibling to have a fuss with. Lily's got some, but they're younger. Now, you've got one you can fuss with. Oh, she agreed heartily on that one. And John Michael's got some that he could get in a squabble with. But here is a family with how many brothers? Okay, so he's got 11 brothers, doesn't he? Huh? Now you're getting technical. Brothers or half-brothers. And so he's got all these brothers. And how old was his daddy? Anybody know?
He was 91 when Joseph was
born. So how old is he now? 108. Daddy's 108. Now he lived to be 147, so you got to kind of adjust that to kind of get a gauge for our day. But still, he's older. His granddaddy, sometimes people go to their grandfather. Grandfather Isaac was 168. And I simply mentioned that simply because how much guidance or influence could he have from his grandfather, for example, at that age? If he was even around him very much. If we have time at the end of the class, we'll talk about his background that heightens the beauty of his character, because his family, his uncle, for example, was not a very reputable character, Laban. He was a deceiver. He lived in different places. Sometimes people move around. They say that contributed to their instability. He moved around. There are just several things about his background that makes you come to appreciate this young man even more and more. So we point out his family did not function like a normal, loving family. Thus we use the term dysfunctional. Describe how his brothers felt about him and treated him. So what do we read about that in chapter 37, verse 4? What? Well, you're answering question three on question two.
They hated him.
And because they hated him, what kind of atmosphere was in the house does it describe?
They couldn't even speak to him.
Couldn't speak peaceably. Your version may say kindly. Couldn't speak peaceably or friendly or kindly. One version says politely. Imagine you sit down at the table and there's no kind words. How is things today? Is something hateful, mean, digging? Just don't like him. And that's the atmosphere that this young man lived in. That was his family. I want to point out about this dysfunctional family for the simple reason that there are young people whose lives go astray and they blame it on, I came from a dysfunctional family. And sometimes the parents or family members will excuse them and their behavior because their family life was so terrible. That's why this story is such a good story. You can be in a dysfunctional family and choose to do right. And I know people, and can call their names, who come from those kind of situations. And I appreciate them for the fact that their family does not define who they are today. And this was Joseph. So, now the question you were answering, what was driving them to, well, actually you was answering question four. What was driving them to such hostility? What attitudes?
Jealousy.
In Acts chapter 7, verse 9, he says they were jealous. Jealousy is an ugly, ugly sin. Can you put your finger on it? You know, somebody's a thief, you stole something. It's something you can go get the evidence and say you stole something. If it's fornication, you can identify the parties involved, that kind of thing. If it's slander, maybe you can get witnesses about what a person said. But how do you convict a person of jealousy? It's an unseen attitude, but it's so ugly. Jealousy is what caused Jesus to be nailed to a cross. Jealousy is what caused the apostles to be beaten and imprisoned. Jealousy is still alive and well. Jealousy is a stirring of the feelings towards someone, which in itself is not bad. Sometimes that word is used in a good sense. It's a stirring of the feelings to imitate someone. It's used that way. Sometimes it's a stirring of the feelings to protect someone. God is a jealous God. It's used that way. But sometimes it's a stirring of the emotions and feelings to hurt and to injure because of what the other person has. And that was the case with Jesus. He was getting crowds to listen to him and followers, and the Jews didn't like it. That was the case with the apostles. They began to preach the gospel, and people were listening, and thousands were being baptized, and they didn't like it. And this often happens between rivals. And when you study sibling rivalry in the Bible, case after case after case, jealousy was at the heart of it. Why did Cain kill Abel? Jealousy. Because Abel's offer was accepted and his wasn't. Why did Hannah and Peninnah have odds? Why did Peninnah treat Hannah badly?
Because she had children. Hannah didn't.
That's right. And Hannah was loved by the husband. And so Peninnah used the fact that she had children to torment Hannah. There's that jealousy. You see it between Leah and Rachel. And just over and over and over again. And so jealousy is a really real thing between people who are on the same level. It's a bad problem sometimes with preachers. Preachers are jealous of another preacher because they're well known, or they hold more meetings or whatever it may be. That's bad, bad attitude. Yes, Ennis? Yeah, pride is such a hard thing, and that is associated with this idea of jealousy. Exactly, you're right. And it's such a hard thing, yet it underlies so much of the conduct among brethren sometimes, and certainly in the political world, in the social world, and unfortunately in the family. Okay. So what was driving them to this hostility, this hostile attitude? I asked that question. I want number four. I'll get it here in a minute. What are some of the things that stirred this kind of an attitude?
Joseph was
Jacob's favorite. He's
the favorite. And his mother was he loved his mother more than...
Braylon, who's the favorite in your family? Is it wife? You're the favorite? Okay. Better watch it, Wyatt. You know what happens. Y'all have a favorite in the family? Y'all not going to say anything tonight, are you? And so, he was the favorite. They saw that Daddy loved him more than he loved them. Is this a problem with parents?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a real problem sometimes. Sometimes it's a child's imagination. It's not the case. If their family has three children, which is the one that's most likely to feel like less attention is given to them?
The middle child.
The middle child. That's right. And... whether that's true or not, I don't know, but it's easy to happen. Parents, you know, get that first child, man, they just take 1,000 pictures, you know. And then the last child, that's the end of the caboose. That middle child, well, he's there. And that's easy to happen. But anyway, so it's something for parents to be aware of, that you don't make your children feel like they're less important than their sibling are. And to work on that is to maybe you do things with certain children because you have an affinity for that particular thing, but don't neglect the other children. But that's one of the things. What else was driving this attitude of jealousy, according to verse 2?
Joseph told your father the truth about how badly your brothers were taking care of the flock.
Okay, well, I don't know if it was about the flock. Does it say that? No, it just says a bad report. I don't know what the bad report was. One version translates it this way. I thought this was interesting. It said they'd come back and tell his father that his brothers were doing bad things. that may not be the greatest translation as far as being literal, but it catches the idea. I don't know what they were doing. I don't know. But don't you tell on me. Oh, you told Mom and Dad on me. I'll get you. A whole old story, isn't it? And so you can see that they brought a bad report. Now, some people would call Joseph a tattletale. Is it ever good to tattletale?
Never.
Yes, sir. There was a boy that saved Paul's life by doing that, didn't he? That was going to be one of my young people, but I had to pick among all the ones that are available. A young boy who was a tattletale. And he found out about a plot against Paul's life and let him know. And so the soldiers made other plans. So sometimes it's necessary and good to report about things people are planning. And so it's not that Joseph was doing this, or no indication of it at least. And when you look at Joseph's character, it would be unfair to attribute it to him that he was doing it so he would look like the sunshine boy and they would look, you know, kind of dirty. That would be bad if that was his motivation, or if he was doing to get the favor of his father. There's no indication that that was the case. It may have been that he was just concerned about the welfare of his father and his flocks, or even about the welfare of his brothers. But because we see as we continue to study Joseph's life that he was a young man of deep and abiding faith and responsibility. Yes, sir? Okay, that's the third thing that he talked about, that, well, not interpret dreams, but he had a dream that they were going to do what?
Bow down to him.
And so the dream is recorded here, but it may have occurred actually earlier because he talks about his mother, and his mother died in the birth of Benjamin. And so it actually may have occurred earlier, but it's placed here by Moses because he's dealing with this problem in this family. And as you know, the book of Genesis, everything in it's not written in chronological order, but in order of thought. But he had this dream, and Moses inserts it here as one of the causes for the attitude of jealousy and the hostility that they showed to their brother. You know, it's interesting that they did not like the fact that they would bow down to him. But in fact, that became what to them?
Blessing.
Save their life. Became a blessing. This very thing they hated him for. He became the ruler of Egypt. And he fed them. And then he gave them a place to live and protected them. Sometimes the very thing that sibling rivalries have a fit about may turn out to their own benefit. But that's what happened in this particular case.
That was God working through
Joseph, bringing about salvation. You're right, but don't get ahead. Yes, sir.
On the subject of tattletaling, there's probably enough parents in here that like to hear some elderly, have a lot of experience in parenting advice. How do you handle the concept of, like, is this time to tell us that, a sibling did something they shouldn't do? Or is this something that you siblings should be able to work out and parents don't need to know? Because this is an example of how this bad report fostered, a conflict.
Did that make it Joseph's fault?
No.
And so that's one thing to point out. You know, if I tell you I leave later on, maybe you leave your oldest child in charge when he's 12 or 15, and y'all go somewhere, and you tell the other kid, now he's in charge. So you come back, and he says, "Well, Rosie got in the cookie jar." And you had told him not to get in the cookie jar. So he's looking at me now. When is he ever going to say that? Say, "Rosie gets in the cookie jar." And so she gets mad. Why'd you tell on me? But he was doing the right thing. Now, she may feel bad about him and do something to him, you know, go mess up his room or something. But in that particular case, that's when you have to get Rosie to understand he was doing what he was told. But if he wants to get Rosie in trouble so he tattletales about something, that's a different story. And oftentimes we, not just kids, we do it. We try to down the other person. Why? Makes us look better. If that's the purpose of it, shame on us, whether we're 5 or 15 or 75. 76-year-old, you're exempt. But I don't know if there's a across the board way to answer that. Good question, Josh, but every circumstance will have to be weighed on its own merit as to whether or not quote unquote tattletaling is a good thing. And sometimes young people take an oath among one another, I won't tell on you. And that's bad because what happens, and I've seen it happen, in churches, a group of young people kind of have a bond between them. I won't tell on you, you don't tell on me. So here they come to church and they sit on the pew, but when they go out, they're going to clubs, they're dancing, they're drinking, but nobody tells on anybody. That's bad. That's not a good oath. That's a real thing. That's not hypothetical. So, should a child be encouraged to tattletale? If it's out of love, out of obedience to parents, good end. If it's selfish, prideful, that kind of thing. We've got some good parents up here. You have anything to add, Wally?
Yeah, Josh, see me afterwards and I'll explain it to you.
All right, so there's your answer, Josh. Talk to Wally. All right, somebody, yes.
I've recently learned of a situation where a child was scared to tell on another child for fear of his own circumstances. I think we also need to make sure to tell our children that even if you are scared, don't not tell me something because you're scared of the repercussions.
Yeah, that's a good thing to bring up. And, of course, it's up to the parents to make sure that every child understands if you do that to your sibling, you're going to answer to me. And so, but that's a good question, Josh, but I don't know there's an across-the-board answer. But here's a case where Joseph brought back a bad report. It did get him in trouble, but there's no indication it was selfish or prideful at all. So why did Jacob favor Joseph? I don't have the answer to that. Benjamin was born. He was younger. Why didn't he favor Benjamin? I don't know the answer to that. We know from the stories that continues, Joseph was an unusual young man in that he was responsible, he was honest, and he was pure. I'm answering a question a little bit later on. But that's what we know about him. And so maybe he's already exhibiting those kind of characteristics. And maybe that helped to account for the father's attitude toward him. That I cannot tell you. And that is such a contrast to his brothers, at least the older ones. We don't know about Benjamin, but the older ones. Okay, so we asked the question, how far did their hostility take them? They plotted to kill him. And Reuben, the oldest brother, rescued him. Then what'd they do with him?
Sold him
to foreigners, the Midianites, who took him to Egypt. Look, if you have your Bible open to Genesis 37 and verse 28. This gets to the Genesis point a while ago. Chapter 37:28. Some Midianite traders passed by, so they pulled him up and lifted Joseph out of the pit and sold him to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. Here's a little statement. Don't ignore it. Did they care where they took him?
No.
But look at that statement. Thus, they brought him to Egypt. The brothers were responsible for Joseph going to Egypt. They didn't care where he ended up. But thus, they brought him to Egypt. Now, when you get over to, let's drop down to question 9. Look at Genesis chapter 45. Look at verse 5. Who sent Joseph to Egypt?
God did.
God did. God sent me here. But I thought those evil boys... Yeah, they did. God can use evil people for His purposes. Even young men. And young people. God can use good young people for His purposes. Joseph. So, then it says in verse 7, God sent me here before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth. And look at that last phrase. And to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Did they have any idea that their jealousy and evil deed would be the means of their salvation?
They were scared to death when Jacob died.
That's right. Chapter 50, after Jacob died, they were afraid he'd render vengeance. But he said the same thing then, chapter 50, I believe it's verse 20. And look at verse 8. It was not you who sent me here. Yes, they did. Didn't they?
God did.
Huh?
God did.
He said it was not them. Did they? Well, how do you explain that statement?
Not but.
Not but. There it is. More importantly, God used the wickedness of these boys to save His nation, to save His people, to keep His covenant to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I thank God in my prayers that He's faithful to His covenant. When God makes a covenant, if He says there's a heavenly city I've never seen, I believe there's a heavenly city. Because He keeps His covenant. If Jesus says he who believes and is baptized should be saved, forgiveness of sin takes place in the mind of God. It's not something I can go down and see. Why do I believe it? Because God's faithful to His covenant. That's why. And so, look at Psalm 105. Look at verse 17 of Psalm 105. Even in the Psalms, many, many years later, they're singing about this. He sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. Isn't that interesting? And so, we ask question number 6. What was Joseph's attitude and conduct subsequent to? I think I said following. I changed it to subsequent to because not because of. It's just after time thing. Subsequent to this treatment by his brothers in Genesis chapter 39. So open, if you don't have your Bibles open, 39, open there because I want to look at some things there in chapter 39. What was Joseph's attitude and conduct? How would you describe it? I gave you the answer a while ago.
He was a good looking person and well favored.
Oh, so he was a good looking boy because of it?
That's not what I said. The Lord was with Joseph.
How did Potiphar feel about putting him in charge of his house?
He trusted him.
What? He trusted him. He was honest. More than honest. If you're going to put somebody in charge of all your... If Ennis wants to put somebody in charge of all his millions... to handle it right. They're going to have to not only be honest, but what else? They're going to have to be responsible. You can be honest and not know anything about it. You can't depend on people to do the right thing. He's responsible. And then as the story goes on, you look down at at verse 9, what does it tell you about him?
He wanted to
obey God. He wanted to obey God. He was a godly young man. He was pure. He didn't say, you know, we can't do this because I might get thrown in jail or get my head chopped off. That wasn't it. He didn't say, we can't do this because it's going to tear up your family. No, that's not it. He said, this is evil. It's a sin against God. Think about this, young people. You believe in God, right? Suppose now this God that you believe in allows your family to get killed. And then you are put off with some foster family. And they mistreat you. And you end up having to beg for a living. And maybe if something happens, somebody charges you wrong and you're arrested and put in jail. Do you ever think, well, where's God? Where's God in all of this? That wasn't Joseph's attitude. And I have no idea that he would have any idea at this point what his future was and what God was using him for. But he still believes in God and serves God. And it's interesting here in chapter 39, this little statement, verse 2. Now he's been sold into slavery. But it says, verse 2, the Lord is with him. Verse 3, the Lord was with him. In verse 21, now he's thrown in jail. He's been falsely charged. The Lord was with him. In verse 28, the Lord was with him. Isn't that interesting? And if we as parents can instill that kind of faith in our children, the Lord being with you does not mean you're going to have prosperity and freedom and good health. How do you know the Lord's with you? Do you see Him? Do you feel it? How do you know? Faith in His Word. Faith in His promise. That's it. Faith's not a feeling. You get a little funny feeling inside. It's a persuasion based on evidence. We studied this last quarter on internal evidences. And it's that faith. You know, Timothy from a child. His mother and his grandmother instilled faith in him through the Scriptures. And here we don't know much about Joseph's training. Not a whole lot said about it. Somewhere he developed a strong faith in God.
We're all prophets say, if you get lemons, make lemonade.
Do what now?
People of the world would probably say, if you get lemons, make lemonade. But we say, hey, God.
Okay. It's not a bad statement, but I like better the fact that the Lord was with you.
Right.
Verse 5 says, the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake.
That's right.
And he could have had Joseph killed when this mess with his wife came up. But he didn't do that. He just sent him to jail.
Yeah, I don't know that Pharaoh believed his wife. But, you know, sometimes men do things for their wives to maintain family. Stay away from family division or something. I don't know that he believed him. Because if he believed him, I'm not sure he wouldn't have had him killed. But anyway, we don't know that.
Steve.
Yes.
I don't understand this, but in verse 2:24, God was with Joseph, and those around him, maybe his master saw that. He prospered. I don't understand that to say just because God's with us, we're going to prosper. But you find yourself in circumstances where that doesn't seem to be the case. Sir, in the world's view. But having said that, people that are willing to follow God have a behavior and attitude about them that people in the world do recognize often. And it does have a benefit. I mean, a right now benefit to them. Not always the case. You want to do it in any event. But it's just, I just find it interesting when you look at the world and how they view people. few people who actually behave like one should as a Christian.
Good point.
At times they view them that way.
Good point. So everything God tells us to do is for whose good?
Our good.
Our good. If He tells young people to do this and this, it's for your good. And how much more benefit will you get out of being trustworthy and being pure and being honest? Basic principles that will benefit you on your job. It will benefit you in your family. You get married, that your wife or husband can trust you, that they don't have to worry about what you're doing. What you're up to. They know you're pure.
Steve?
Yes.
And to continue that point and how he was maintaining his purity, it also ended up with him in jail. So it's kind of circumstantial. If he is doing righteousness in the right circumstance, it could result in prosperity, or it could result in, you know, a unfortunate physical circumstance.
That's true. That's true. You know, it says here that Joseph wouldn't have an affair with this woman. Besides the sensual appeal, what else would be an appeal to Joseph in this particular circumstance?
Power.
Power? What did you mention a while ago, Ennis?
Pride.
Pride. Here's this young man. How old was Joseph in the event you're reading about here in chapter 39 and chapter 40 about him going to jail? How old was Joseph in that period of time? What? I don't know. He could have been. He could have been 22 or 23. He was somewhere between 17 and 28. Somewhere in that. He's 17 when you read 37. In prison 2 years, and he stood before Pharaoh when he was 30. So between 17 and 28. Young men between 17 and 28, sometimes their emotions are the strongest, aren't they? And there's that sense of pride, masculinity. But Joseph didn't let any of that rule him. What ruled him? Verse 9. This is evil. It'll be a sin against God. And you know, young people, when you graduate, there's going to be your peers that will encourage you to do things that sacrifice your purity. There is attitude in the world that will tell young men, for example, you can't live to age 25 as a virgin. I don't know what age he was, 25? I don't know. But you can't do it. People in the world can't live that way. And so if you're 20, 22, and you continue to maintain your virginity, boy or girl, when you're 25, 26, you tell somebody, they might say, oh, you're lying. Can you think not only of Joseph, can you think of a young woman in the face of terrible environment that kept her virginity?
Mary.
She lived in Nazareth, wicked city. Nathaniel says, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? But here's a virgin. And God knew where she lived and God knew her name. We studied about a virgin last Wednesday night. Who was it?
Shulamite
maiden. And she found a young boy who appreciated her for her virginity. That's what you want to look for. If you're a young man, find a girl who will appreciate you, that you keep your body pure. If you're a young girl, find a man who appreciates you because you keep your body pure and not try to seduce you to giving up your purity. So, great lessons here from Joseph. So, we talk about his family. I'm about out of time, but talk about his background. Had his father always been an admirable man? What kind of man was he in the early years? Deceiver. Man, he was a deceiver. He was. Came to have faith in God. God used him. His uncle Laban was a deceiver. He was mercenary. He was willing to use his daughter for gain. He was not trustworthy about the covenant he made with Jacob. That's his uncle. What about his mama, Rachel? What kind of woman was she?
Same. stole the idols.
Jealous, bitter, lied, stole idols. That's his mama. What's this about a dysfunctional family? I don't stand a chance. His grandfather Isaac was a man of faith, but he didn't even get to meet him until he was better than 12 years old. And I don't know how much time he spent with him. His brothers. How about his brothers? We know this a little bit about his brothers. So I ask you the question on the lesson. When this event took place that you read about in Genesis 37, how old were his brothers? Yeah, you have an idea. Within a span of 7 years. Verses I gave you show that. So, somewhere between 17 and 24. These are not old men. 17 and 24. In Genesis 34, what did these boys do? Remember? They went to Shechem, lied, persuaded the men to be circumcised, and went in and killed the men, took their goods. They're fine brothers here, boy. Fine bunch of young boys. How in the world can Joseph survive that kind of family when his older siblings are so rotten? But he did. So all the excuses people make, you don't know my family, you don't know my brothers, you don't know my sister, don't make a difference. Look at Josiah. What was his daddy like? Idolater, terrible man. What about his granddaddy? Manasseh, one of the wickedest kings there was. But Josiah was an amazing young man. So these are great lessons to encourage. And then, of course, his moral courage. Though living in another land among foreigners, he kept his faith just like Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Although he was alone in the house with a woman who tried to seduce him, he maintained his faith. When he was cast among prisoners for 2 years, he maintained his faith and his purity and his honesty. When he was standing before the ruler of the nation, he maintained his courage and faith in God. And so whether in times of difficulty, and then he became the second man in Egypt, didn't change that. He still lived by faith in God, whether in times of adversity or times of prosperity. In times of difficulty or times of ease. That's what faith will do for you. It'll make you a person that will survive whatever this world brings. And I don't know what it's going to bring. And I hope we as parents and grandparents are praying for our children and grandchildren. Ennis?
Sure, this is a great example for us. Even though things may not have been so good, we can even know our own brothers and sisters.
That's right. Regardless, and so there's no excuse. There's no room in serving God for excuse making. Well, somebody calls me. This is difficult. I had a hard time, or whatever it may be. And these examples of these young people that we've been studying hopefully bring that out. Okay, our time is up. Thank you for your good comments and attention tonight.